Tuesday, September 3rd. So far today, the first day of the war's second year, London has had two air raids. The first raid lasted 4 hours, and during that time, bombs fell on London's outskirts. Slight damage was reported. The second raid warning was still in progress when 11 o'clock came, the hour when Britain declared war a year ago. In France, there was no mention in newspapers of the anniversary. In Berlin, the Nazis claimed British planes were not effective in bombing Germany last night. Rome said British planes bombed the great Italian port of Genoa last night. Italy and Germany, meanwhile, advised Romania to curb demonstrations over the Transylvanian situation. Now, Columbia's correspondent reports direct from the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is London. 1 year ago today, Chamberlain had finished speaking to the British people to tell them war had come when air raid sirens went off for the first time. Today, at the same time, almost to the minute, these sirens were wailing once more. It was the all clear, announcing that the first raid of the day, a day in which we expect many more, was over. At that electrifying hour of last September 3rd, life in London suddenly stopped and the whole city went underground. Apprehensively, millions of families waited for the crash of bombs, but it was only a lone plane flying over the seacoast and not an enemy plane at that. This morning, it was another real raid. An Englishman died sudden death as a result. But London had changed. Traffic moved in the streets as usual. Nobody rushed to their shelters. I saw a few curious heads poking out of windows, but that was all. Curiosity has replaced fear, but even curiosity is growing weaker. The king went right ahead with a ceremony of decorating heroes of the war in Buckingham Palace. This morning's anniversary raid was over the estuary of the Thames and followed by a battle over the southeast coast. Last night and early this morning, we had a five-hour alarm in London. I saw one parachute flare lighting up the northern part of town. Two or three screaming bombs came down and smashed some houses, but nobody in London was killed. Most of the German raiders were over England last night were after military objectives up in the Midlands. After 12 months of war, British military experts are taking stock today. So much has happened that the immediate issues of 1 year ago are almost forgotten. It takes an effort of mind to remember that there was once a free city of Danzig, the original pretext for war. The same military experts who debated the virtues of the Polish cavalry now discuss the new four-engine German bomber over England this week. On September 3rd of last year, the popular idea of modern war was one of great cities devastated by bombing and mass slaughter. Today, its realized loss of life in this war has been remarkably small. The London Times admits this morning that Britain has suffered a worse series of strategic disasters this year than the most pessimistic imagination could have contemplated. They compare Hitler's military genius with that of Moltke and Ludendorff. They admit that when the British army stood at bay in the Channel ports, imminent defeat stared the British Empire in the face. Two great events, however, have changed the whole course that history was taking. One was the rescue of 365,000 men at Dunkirk. The other, the great air battle over England early in August. Those two events in the minds of Englishmen today ensured the ultimate defeat of the German Reich. In looking at the coming year, the Times declares that most significant of all in the realm of ideas is the rising tide of sympathy for Britain in the United States. This morning, the military authorities themselves have cast up the accounts. They assert that their soldiers, man for man, are superior to the army of the Nazis. They admit, quite frankly, that when British forces in Norway turned away from Trondheim, defeat in that campaign became certain. They admit that British troops in Norway were untrained, unprepared, and ill-equipped. They say the evacuation of British Somaliland was inevitable after the France collapsed. Today, in northern Africa, the British Army has won a tactical victory. By this, they mean that the big Italian forces there were so constantly harassed that they could not begin their grand offensive on schedule. Now, however, reinforcements have reached that British army, and the defenses of Egypt are strong. As for the year's war at sea, British officialdom this morning declares a balance sheet clearly shows a profit for the British Empire. And as for the air, London estimates say that in these 12 months, the RAF and British ground forces themselves have destroyed nearly 4,000 of Goering's armada. Goering's total loss is put at some 7,000 aircraft. And the loss of trained German personnel at 17,000 men. I return you now to CBS New York.
This is New York, and here is a dispatch from Bucharest, Romania. Bands of Hungarians invaded Transylvania last night and started guerrilla warfare. It was disclosed today. There was firing all night, according to official Romanian quarters. Hungarian irregulars, including 5th columnists, were said to have pillaged many villages. Now, Columbia's correspondent has reported from London. In just a second, we take you back across the waters to the German capital. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. Another day with German bomber and fighter planes in the air over England. That is the last news this morning. The planes are attacking military objectives north of London, and numerous dogfights are reported. So the aerial war goes on with seemingly no let-up in the intensity. Just when it will finish is the big question both here and in England. There is a feeling in the air, one of those intangible things that cannot be put down on paper, that we may expect something big soon. Today is the first anniversary of the entrance of England with France into the war against Germany. But whether such calendar notes affect the decision of Herr Hitler and Heisman, we have no way of knowing. An army officer writing in the Folkestone Beobachter this morning touches on one aspect of this situation. He says that all the interim periods between the big campaigns have been devoted to intense preparation by all the arms of the German forces. The army is trained anew for all its probable assignments, and the implication is that when the German Air Force, Army, and Navy feel that they are ready to go again, then another campaign starts. And from what we have seen of this war so far, that seems to cover the situation. Though it is no satisfaction to those who want to look deep into the future. Last night, German planes continued their attacks on England. According to the reports this morning, a bomber's raided airfields in the southeast section of England. The official report claims that hangars and barracks suffered direct hits, and the German bombs caused large fires to break out. There were many air battles between the British and German planes during the day. According to this report, the Germans destroyed 93 British planes, while the Germans lost 23. The Germans say that last night air patrols and anti-aircraft fire effectively handled British planes who crossed the border. Three British planes were shot down, and according to the information this morning, the British bombers did not penetrate very deep into Germany. The German radio this morning announces that there were several air raid alarms sounded in various parts of Switzerland last night, caused by the passage of foreign planes. And the German report identifies these planes as British. A propaganda company reporter has a story in one of the morning papers in which he states that the airfield at East Church, England, has been completely destroyed. This was accomplished by German bombers on Sunday afternoon, he reports. The weather was as clear as could be desired for bombing raids. The German planes were first attacked by a steady and well-aimed barrage of anti-aircraft fire over Dover, this reporter writes. However, German bombers were able to pierce the sail of shrapnel without a loss. Then they swooped down on East Church, described as an island in the Thames estuary. Bombers of all calibers were loaded on the East Church airport, wrecking wooden hangars, barracks, and fire trucks. There were TV critters and food itself, as a flying squadron.
Whereby the United States will obtain naval and air bases in British Islands off American shores are virtually concluded. Within the next 2 or 3 days, an announcement is slated to be made. Britain is expected to give a 99-year lease for a base in faraway Trinidad in the Caribbean near Venezuela. Here is a southern gateway to the Panama Canal and a strategic stepping stone to the defense of South America. The island of Jamaica, Bermuda, and Newfoundland commanding the short northern route to Europe are the other principal locations which have been negotiated. President Roosevelt himself has handled the negotiation and will probably make the announcement. Many congressmen in Washington speculate as to whether thereafter Mr. Roosevelt may not propose or undertake action to transfer American destroyers to Britain. In the House of Representatives, the issue today is conscription. For 2 days, the members of the House may argue and wrangle on the draft bill. 2 more days are allotted for consideration of amendments. By Friday evening, a final vote will be taken. Strict rules make the House a very different place from the Senate, much less talkative. But with 435 members, the House would be a bedlam. The loose procedure of the Senate was followed, and each member were allowed to speak as long as he pleased. This morning, before the debate gets underway, the House Military Affairs Committee will decide an important issue. Is industry to be made subject to conscription as well as men? Is the government to be empowered in the draft bill to take over private plans if it thinks they are not cooperating in the defense program? A majority of the Republicans on the committee and some Democrats are going to follow the lead of Wendell Willkie. He has attacked the industrial conscription provision in the Senate version of the draft bill. He views it as a step to a New Deal imposed socialism, disastrous to the defense program, because he thinks the bare threat of government action would interfere with industrial cooperation. Probably a majority of the Democrats on the House committee will support the Senate provision on the theory that if men are to be drafted, industry should be subject to compulsion also. But the chairman of the House Military Affairs Committee, Representative Andrew May, says he is opposed to the clause providing for industrial conscription, but he may vote for a compromise. Industry already has volunteers, it may. I see no reason for conscripting it. The compromise proposal is to have the government take over the operation of recalcitrant plants while leaving the ownership title to the private owners. Another dispute centers around the age of men to be registered. All this talk of related issues almost hides the most important fact. Both Democratic and Republican leaders are predicting the Army draft bill will pass in the House as it did in the Senate, by a 2-to-1 vote. One estimate from an administration source is that the defense program will cut in half by next summer the number of people without jobs. But while a spur is given to industry, the question mark for agriculture becomes more pronounced. The Agriculture Department predicts another decrease in the sale of American tobacco to Great Britain. The British authorities are requiring all tobacco mixtures to have an increased proportion of Turkish and Greek tobacco. But trade now must follow the flag of politics, and Turkey and Greece are two of the last countries in Europe which are free enough to stand their ground against the Axis powers. The British blockade on Nazi-controlled Europe shuts down the export of other American farm products. The war forces artificial agricultural arrangements upon various countries. Our Agriculture Department reports the Argentine government has been authorized to buy corn from its farmers at 36 cents a bushel because their foreign market is collapsing. And despite all the surplus cotton available elsewhere, the government of Australia is trying to expand Australian cotton production by further government aid to growers. Bounty payments to produce more cotton. Half the world has too much of agricultural products and the other half is encouraging expensive national programs which may make the lack of balance permanent. We return you now to New York.
And with this news from Washington, Columbia concludes another of these morning reports of national and international developments, which comes to you each morning at this time and each evening at 6:45 Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Eric Severide was heard from London, Edwin Hartridge from Berlin, and Albert Warner from Washington. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.